That was
here to cause confusion.
Oh, trash is more.
Well, hello everyone. Sorry for the long delay today. There was a problem. You see, I'm not actually at the lodge today. I am back at home. And this laptop that I'm using, which is my laptop at home, which is a superb gaming laptop that I use to play such games as Book of Hours. What's that recent one I've been playing? I play RimWorld on it. What else do I play on this laptop? Monster Train 2, Backpack Battles. Those are the sorts of games I play on this laptop. It's a great laptop. But for some reason, I had disabled the camera access on this computer. I think when I was messing about with that crane. Do you remember I used that crane in a couple of videos? The overhead crane thing. And in order to use that, I had to disable the internal camera. And for some reason, the disabled camera access prevented StreamYards from accessing my microphone. And because of that, I couldn't start the show because it couldn't see my mic. But anyway, after trying to update my audio drivers and all sorts of bullshit, I finally found a way to start it. Now, there are several problems with today's show in any case. One, I'm not at the lodge, I'm at home. Two, at some point I have to go and pick up AAA from school. So there's a hard stop at 4:45. Also, my mother is here visiting because the missus is away on some sort of course this week. And then at the same time, I am simmering a stew, as they say. I'm making a spaghetti bolognese. So I've got that on the stove. It's on a low heat, but I'm going to have to keep an eye on it so it doesn't dry out. So at some point, I have to go and check on the spag bol. My mother's gone to bed. And then at the same time, I'm expecting a delivery of my long-expected delivery of my composting hot bin, ladies and gentlemen, a hot bin. Why have I bought a really, really expensive hot bin? It is because I cannot get the temperature of my normal compost heap up high enough to kill the weed seeds. And I've got a lot of weeds. So I need to get that temperature up to 60 degrees and kill the weed seeds. Also, I don't want to wait 2 years for compost. I want to make it in like 3 months, right? And I've watched a lot of videos. I've done a lot of research. And this hot bin that I bought is the dogs, I'm telling you. It is the creme de la creme in the world of composting. I basically only watch composting videos at the moment. So there's that. So what else have we got here? What else? Okay, so we're going to be talking about, and so that all of that means is that we need to be relatively concise and compact. Hopefully there's not that many super chats and super thanks. I'll try to get through them all, as I always do. Before we get on to that, I want to talk about Angela Rayner and what her departure means for the British government. We've had several weeks of LBC, which is making people go crazy. Every single week I've done a lot of LBC review. And it causes people to kind of go crazy. So I thought I'd be easy on everybody this week and approach the topic with our ever favourite shitlib commentators, Campbell and Stewart. It's going to be Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart this week. But before I get there, I'll just remind people, pick up courses at the academic agency. And also I wrote an article on my Substack about this. It's not that long, and I thought it may be worth reading through my article so that everybody's kind of up to speed with what exactly this means. The article is called "Ed Miliband Defies Blair and remains after Starmer's reshuffle. I might as well share my screen. Might as well share my screen as we read through this together. So here is my take, and then we're going to see what Campbell and Stewart make of it. I also, time permitting, want to take a little look at Reform. What's his name? Matt Goodwin did something uber cringy, which is he put on this blue cap, Make Britain Great Again or something. I couldn't believe it. It's one of the cringiest things I've ever seen. Reform have put on probably the most cringy conference of all time, including a woman dancing in sequins and various other things. Stewart and Campbell are going mental about this conference, thinking that we've got a coming of a British Trump or even, the return of fascism or something. So we'll see what they make of that. I do want to give Reform a little bit of time this week as well. But before we get there, let me read this article so that we're all on the same page. It's called Ed Miliband Defies Blair and Remains After Starmer's Reshuffle. The removal of the Red Queen, Angela Rayner, Labour's last even vaguely likeable frontline politician, triggered a dramatic reshuffle. I do think this is a loss for Labour, by the way, because Rayner, whether you love her or hate her, is likeable. Working class girl, common human touch. You know, you might disagree with the politics or whatever, but she has charisma, right? She's got a modicum of charisma, which is sorely lacking in this cut. I mean, but Starmer's a robot. Yvette Cooper is a bloody robot. You know, David Lammy is a joke. There's not a lot of good football manager stats in the charisma stakes. So Rayner was basically it for this cabinet, and she's gone, okay? We can speculate later about who did this. I don't actually think it was Tone. I don't think it was Blair who took out Rayner. I'm not sure that it was Starmer. I think this was done basically by the Tory press, by the right-leaning press in the country. Anyway, let's carry on. As I wrote back in March, I wrote this article called Tony Blair has achieved full spectrum dominance, right? Where I basically said, look, he is gunning for Miliband. Miliband's days are surely numbered, right? Because Blair was really going at Miliband. There was loads and loads of articles in the press, you know, targeting Miliband. The bacon sandwich came back up. And so this was the ideal time to remove one of the largest thorns in the side of the Dark Lord, Tony Blair, and his relentless agenda to take Britain through a digital revolution. In short, Miliband's net zero madness threatens to upend the control grid Blair wishes to install, and, worse for everyone, even threatens to crash the economy. And my video today was about the state of the British economy. Is it about to crash? Probably overblown. We're probably not going to get an IMF intervention. But still, the economy is not good, as I talked through in that video. Okay. It has now been revealed by Robert Peston that Starmer did try to remove Ed Miliband and that Miliband dug in, refusing to leave his post at Secretary for Energy and destroying British competitiveness. Since when do cabinet ministers resist reshuffles? This reveals that Miliband somehow retains significant power within the Tory party, sufficient to resist both Darth Vader and the Emperor. This is a troubling development because Miliband is a lunatic. He simply must be isolated and brought down. I believe it is a matter of national emergency that Ed Miliband is removed from his post, as I've been saying for weeks and months. The reshuffle is being branded as phase two. It is thoroughly Blairite in all other respects. Clearly, it was planned as a kind of blitzkrieg on the soft left to consolidate power for the centrists. Darren Jones, who was appointed chief secretary to the prime minister, is a pure Blairite and a fiscal hawk. Rachel Reeves is also now basically forced by stark reality to be Blairite. The government has no option but to shift away from expansive left-wing spending towards more restrained strategies focused on growth. Blair veteran Jackie Smith was brought back and put in charge of skills, and a fellow Blair veteran, Pat McFadden, who was given the Department for Work and Pensions, which has expanded to become a power centre in the cabinet. Alistair McGovern, another hardcore Blairite, also joins his team as Minister for Employment. And if you have a look at Alistair McGovern, she came through the ranks of something called Progress, capital P Progress. She was a protege of Pat McFadden, a total Blair machine creature, Fabian Society, you name it. She is like, she's got this stuff running through her veins, Alison McGovern. She also joins McFadden's team as the Minister for Employment. The slop right, now virtually devoid of brain power and fueled almost solely by vibes and increasingly American cliques, has focused on the fact that Shabana Mahmood, the new Home Secretary, is a Muslim. That is true, but she is also a Blairite who represents a tougher stance on immigration and border control. She is joined by Mike Tapp, also a Blairite, who is said to be very serious about implementing stricter enforcement policy measures and enhanced deportation processes. So while Mahmood is seen as a woke appointment by slopulists, the Home Office is in real terms getting closer to the David Blunkett tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime model. Other staunch Blairite appointments in the cabinet include Emma Reynolds, Peter Kyle, and Douglas Alexander, who bolster the ranks, which already included Wes Streeting and Liz Kendall. I wish I didn't know so much about these conniving background characters, but unfortunately I do. It's a little hobby of mine to know who's in the Labour squad. All this means Miliband is now virtually surrounded. He is the last soft left or brownite holdout, the nugget, that which will not flush. It should be noted that he retains the brownite minion, Angela Eagle. Some people remember her briefly standing to be Labour leader, Angela Eagle, in his office. So maybe it is a nugget and a half. Starmer wanted to shunt Miliband off to housing to pick up Rayner's remit, something of a poison chalice. But he refused to move. How could he get away with this? First, Miliband enjoys significant support from climate change ideologues in the Labour Party. And Starmer does not really have the capital for another revolt from the backbenches. Second, as a former party leader, it is possible that Miliband has receipts and keys to skeleton closets. Some activists within the Labour Party view net zero as non-negotiable, with Starmer already facing criticism for a perceived rightward shift on immigration, flag slop, etc. He needs some sort of bone to throw to the left. Now, and just to explain the dynamics here, Miliband is, right, if you can remember, within the Tory party, Boris Johnson was hated by the grandees, by the leadership of the party, by most of the other MPs, right? Johnson wasn't liked, but the membership, the Tory faithful, the base, if you want, loved Boris, okay? And Miliband basically has similar dynamics in so much as he's loved by the base, he's loved by the Labour rank and file, absolutely hated by Blair, disliked by Starmer. They don't want him, right? The other senior Labour don't like him, but the base love him. Okay, so he's popular within the party, in other words. Some activists within the Labour Party view net zero as non-negotiable, and with Starmer already facing criticism, you know, I read this, it is likely that he has calculated that forcing the issue now would alienate the left too much at this time when the party requires unity and cohesion. The trouble is that energy is not a bone that the country or Starmer can afford to throw, since Miliband is now an isolated figure in the cabinet. It is possible he will gradually be frozen out of meetings, that parts of his remit will be taken away and reallocated, that he will be undermined every term by the Treasury, Work and Pensions, Home Office, and all the other departments under Blairite control. I hope, I wish. Remember, the Dark Lord never suffers defeat, only setbacks. Miliband has somehow survived again, but as a matter of necessity, it surely cannot be for long. And I don't really know what's going to happen now, because, I mean, really, the reshuffle was the time for Miliband to go. He's still here, and I think this is really starting to get urgent for him to be removed. The weakness of Starmer, not making his move at that point. Or, you know, he says, look, Miliband, I want you to move to housing. Miliband says no. He's, oh, all right then. All right then. How about no? How about you have to go? I'm the Prime Minister. Tone would have moved him. Tone would have sacked him 5 months ago. That's how weak Starmer is. Don't forget, Starmer technically has a bigger majority than Blair ever had. He's just weak, absolutely weak, pathetic. So let us now see what Campbell and Stewart have to say about Rayner. We don't have to linger on this too long. We'll go 10 minutes or so, and then we'll see what they're saying about Farage.
Welcome to Arrestus Politics Emergency Pod. We pressed the button. Why? Because Angela Rayner, the Deputy Prime Minister, has resigned. Laurie Magnus. Why am I getting him mixed up with Chris Mayer? That's really weird.
Or with John Major, maybe.
No, I don't think so. No. Anyway, the ethics advisor has ruled that whilst he thinks that Angela...
Come on, admit it, guys. Compared to Ben Kentish, these two are fine. This is like a gentle breeze compared to Ben Kentish and the dog-faced gremlin. Admit it. These two are... Oh, my word, they haven't got going yet. Let's see. Stewart had a way of winding me up as well. So let's see how this goes.
Rayner behaved with integrity and was very open and transparent with him, that nonetheless her handling of her tax affairs did not meet the standards of the ministerial code, and Keir Starmer was in part elected because he said he would strengthen the standards. So, Rory, initial reaction, and then we'll dig in a bit deeper.
Yeah, well, I think the sort of big framing to remind people is that Angela Rayner is a very, very unusual, powerful heavyweight in the Labour setup.
Can I just say, by the way, one thing I didn't say in that article, one thing I want to say about our Ange, the Red Queen, this proved an unpopular tweet that I made. All my tweets are unpopular. I don't care. Fuck you all. I truly believe that Angela was done dirty, right? She was done dirty. Let me explain why. Every single one of these bastards, every single one of these people who are in Tory and Labour, do this sort of stuff. They're always getting away with it. Farage, every single one of those Etonian Bullingdon Club wankers, every single one of them gets away with this stuff on the regular. Okay. Our Ange from the council estate, I claim, was done dirty because she was a working class white girl who didn't know what she was doing. I truly believe that. I truly believe that if it had been Morg or any one of these other ones, either they would have had better advice, they would have hidden it better, they would have gone away with it, and they do get away with it. But maybe Rayner didn't quite know what she was doing, so she's been caught out, and I say, done dirty. I'm not saying that she wasn't guilty, she absolutely was. I'm just saying that the only reason she hasn't got away with it is because she's not one of them. I truly believe that, ladies and gentlemen, I truly believe that. All right, let's carry on.
She was Deputy Prime Minister. She was the Housing Secretary, and therefore she was in charge of probably the biggest part of what the government has been promising, which is sorting out the housing crisis and building hundreds of thousands of homes. Maybe not the biggest part, but definitely a central plank of their entire growth strategy, and growth is everything. And obviously you and I, Alistair, have been going off and up to Leeds and other places to talk to housing associations, house builders.
Yeah, I guarantee you that all of the ethnic ones, Sunak, Patel, Javid, you know, that Mahmood who's there now, they would have all got away with it too. Every single one of them would have got away with it. And the Hooray Henrys, right, would have got away with it. The ethnics and the Hooray Henrys would have got away with it. not our Ange, though, right? And I remember back in the day, they used to pick on Prescott for having two Jags as well. Two Jags, Prescott. Why shouldn't he have two Jags? They don't pick on anyone else for having two Jags. I'm telling you, there is a hatred of people from that sort of background in this country, and it comes in creepy little ways like this. I'm just telling you, they would have gone away with it, and she hasn't. Anyway, let's carry on.
Well, there's a lot of that was about Angela Rayner, Angela Rayner's energy, Angela Rayner pushing ahead with planning. So I think it matters for the Labour Party. It matters for the government. It matters specifically for this drive on housing. But apart from that, she's also a very, very unusual figure in the Labour front bench, and a Labour front bench that can seem a little bit cautious, a little bit managerial, a little bit dry. She is this very much more larger than life, relaxed, outspoken, terrific communicator, as we found when we did our...
Yeah, she's human. Angela Rayner is the only human and non-robot-y member of the current government. That's what Stewart is saying that.
Interview on leading. Over to you.
Yeah, I think we should put that out, actually, because, I mean, lots of people will be... Lots of our listeners and viewers will have seen and heard it, but some might not. And it was a pretty remarkable interview, I think. And I think it was one of the reasons, because she hadn't given many really in-depth interviews, why there was a sense of a changing perception around her. Look, I'll be absolutely frank about it. I really like Angela Rayner. I think she's her heart's in the right place. I think she's somebody that brings a lot to the Labour Party and up till now to the Labour government. If you look at, you say, housing, the workers' right, the renters' bill, she's been in charge of the devolution bill that was just...
By the way, this is why I think she wasn't done in by Starmer, Blair, or forces within the Labour Party, because I noticed that this was an external hit, because I noticed there was an attempt just before she went of leftists in the media to close ranks. Labour apparatchiks, if you want, were trying to close ranks. They were trying to say, oh, well, she's a woman and all this sort of stuff. It didn't work. She still had to go in the end. And as soon as I saw that NHS was involved, I was like, yeah, it's untenable. She has to go. I'm just saying that I don't think it was an internal Labour job. I think it was done by Tory boys, Tufton Street crew, Fleet Street, and so on. Media, right-wing media did it, not Labour. That's just my feeling on this. Tell me if you disagree, or if you have information to suggest otherwise. I don't think like Morgan McSweeney secretly was doing in Rayner. I actually think that the government could have done without this at this time. That's my personal view, but anyway.
I think it was being debated just before Parliament went away. It might even have been last week. And, you know, she's a serious person. She's a figure in politics, the likes of which I think we need more rather than...
To answer the guy in the chat, why do I do these shows? I like to use a dialectical technique to have people on who I vehemently disagree with, or many, many, like people like this, or people like the LBC guys, because I don't know what they're going to say. And it often acts as a catalyst for me to kind of reveal what I really, really think, which, I mean, often some of my best moments on these shows have come reacting to Rory Stewart. So that's why I do it.
Fewer. And ultimately, I think this is one of those situations where the personal and the political have collided. I don't know how she kind of manages her private life and how she manages her approach to things like tax and that sort of thing. You get the sense over the last few days, as this has kind of unraveled and as the press has kind of piled on, and the Telegraph in particular has been really pushing and digging up new details.
Yeah, it was the right-wing press. You mentioned the Telegraph. This was not... See, the thing is, Labour tend not to go in for the absolute skullduggery that the Tories, you know, Tories do each other in all the time. Labour are a lot more about like solidarity and party loyalty and weird things like that. So they've even Brown and Blair, when they were counter messaging each other and so on, they never actually did each other in. If you remember, they still did it pretty amicably. So yeah, there's Labour are a lot less ruthless to their own than the Tories tend to be. So I think this was a Tory boy job.
Kept feeling she was one step away from perhaps being forced out. I actually think that she's got so much. Kind of reputational strength in the bank, particularly in the Labour Party bank, that maybe the when Keir Starmer went out the other day and absolutely 100% defended her without maybe knowing the full facts, then that is one of the reasons why. But he's been very clear that the ethics advisor having had the power strengthened and ministers having the ability to self-refer, that frankly, if you read the last couple of paragraphs, it's clear that
apparently a lot of people had a crash. Well, I didn't have a crash on this end. I don't know what's going on. I didn't have a crash.
He felt she had to go.
Well, just again to try to summarise for people what seems to have happened. She bought a.
I don't know what's going on. People say they've got no sound now. What's going on? What's going on? What I said was Labour don't do their own in, okay? They tend not, even when it was Brown versus Blair, they tended not to do their own in. It was white kid gloves. It was amicable. Even, you know, there was occasional counter-signalling in the press and so on. But they tend not to go in for ruthless Tory-style, you know, violence, right? Labour on Labour. And somebody in the chat mentioned that Starmer is savage and so on. When it's the hard left, when it's the militant tendency, when it's Momentum, when it's Corbyn, all bets are off. They will absolutely, you know, all the rule book is out then because they are enemy. And I remember a rant that Alan Johnson gave on that show that Andrew Neil used to present. I forgot what it's called now, the one with the Blue Nun and Diane Abbott and all that. I remember him absolutely tearing that guy from Momentum to shreds. They hate the hard left, the far left, the militant tendency within Labour and see them as, you know, that they're more savage on them than they even are on the Tories, I would say, Labour. But when it comes to new Labour on new Labour violence, or let's say it's Blairites versus soft left or Blair versus Brown or whatever, it's generally quite amicable, right? Even in the height of the tension between them, they maintain party discipline, loyalty, solidarity, and things like that. Whereas the Tories are absolute bastards to each other, as people know. So all of that means, I think, that this is a Tory hit job. That's all I was saying in the bit that you missed, all right?
House in a flat in Hove, in rather a nice building, 50 miles from London, overlooking the sea. And it was £800,000. And I think this immediately started probably journalists saying, what's going on here? Because Hove is not her constituency and it's not London where she works. So what's she doing buying a house in Hove? And that may be to do with her personal life, you know, maybe her new partner's based in Hove. But that's something immediately that I, as a former politician, can completely see where the problem emerges from the start before you get onto tax. If I had very visibly suddenly bought a home when I was the Member of Parliament for Penrith and the Border, and it was neither in London nor in Cumbria, people would have said, what on earth is this thing, right? And I would have had to explain. And presumably she would have to say,
this is boring. We have to get past this. I want to know what they're going to say about what happens to Labour now.
I mean, Michael Heseltine was the first. factors that led to people like her. It's very interesting watching all the comments flooding in.
It's too boring. If they're going to spend the whole time on Reyna, that's too boring. Let's see what they've got to say about Nigel. I'm interested to know the hysteria on the left on reform.
But full Trumpian, 600,000
deportations. Yeah.
Do we realistically think, Zia, we can deport 500,000-600,000 people in the lifetime of the first parliament?
Totally. Yeah.
But it's Trumpian. It is Trumpian. The hypocrisy of this is what gets me. I mean, I resent the way that the BBC yesterday said that reform and flags and hotels has been the story of the summer.
We both watched this amazing short social media clip that Number 10 have brought together.
So we're going to phase two.
And at no point did I discover what phase two was about. I kept thinking we're going to hear now, in phase two, we're going to do something. This is the vision. This is the direction.
The strategy at the top has to be driven from the top and understood by everybody.
Welcome to the Restless Politics Question Time with me, Rory Stewart.
What is Rory Stewart actually wearing? Is that a shell suit? Is he wearing a shell suit from the 90s?
Stewart?
And me, Alistair Campbell. Hilary Coates' first question, Rory. What are your thoughts on Keir Starmer's mini reshuffle? Will fresh faces bring some hope or just more inconsistency and chaos? I'm guessing Hilary's not very impressed by the government thus far.
No, I think more inconsistency and chaos doesn't sound great, does it? We both watched this amazing short social media clip that Number 10 have brought together of Starmer announcing his mini reshuffle.
So we're going to phase two.
And it was a pretty peculiar piece of communication, quite sort of Starmer-like. He says, at least as far as I remember, I'm delighted to announce we're now entering phase two of the government. And
that may be the worst Keir Starmer impression of all time. He made him sound like cool and slick or something. I'm here to announce we're moving into phase two. Anybody who opposes it will face the full force of the law.
Brought in a new team, and there were sort of pictures of him at his desk, and then he's walking up the stairs in Number 10, and then he's at a lectern.
And none of the civil servants' faces were shown.
And at no point did I discover what phase two was about. I kept thinking, we're going to hear now, in phase two, we're going to do something. This is the vision. This is the direction. Instead of which, it seemed to be largely about the fact that he was reshuffling, but I didn't see reshuffling to do what.
Yeah. The only thing is it even a reshuffle? Because people normally associate reshuffle.
So they're talking about the little mini reshuffle they did before the big reshuffle. So this is kind of old. This is a little bit older. They clearly haven't done a video on the actual reshuffle yet. I want to get to the bit where they talk about Farage. See if they don't get to it soon, I'll fast forward them.
Shuffles with cabinet ministers being moved. Now, one cabinet minister was moved, but Darren Jones.
But just sort of moved sideways.
Well, he's been moved. I'm a bit of a fan of Darren Jones. The chief secretary. Yep.
What's the monkey face that Stewart does? He's just gurning like a monkey all the time.
Treasury. He's now got this new job that never existed before, Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister.
Can I, Alistair, just sort of quickly on that? I mean, what is this job? What sort of roles in the Blair administration do you think were covered by this? I can't really work out in the Cameron government
or
the
May government. I think what it is that Keir Starmer has come back from the summer. The domestic debate, mm-hmm. I mean, I resent the way that the BBC yesterday said that, you know, reform and flags and hotels has been the story of the summer, given we've had stuff going on in Ukraine, Gaza, et cetera, et cetera.
I should mention, by the way, that Alistair Campbell has a conspiracy theory shared by many leftists and by me, by the way, that the BBC and the British media at large are trying to meme Farage into office and that the regime wants Farage. Campbell is furious with the amount of airtime that Farage gets. And he's furious by the way that the BBC allow Farage to set the agenda. The thing is, he's basically right. He's basically right in this assessment. I don't really know what's going on or why that is the case, but it does appear to be the case.
Etc. But certainly Nigel Farage and Reform have commanded an awful lot of airspace over the summer. Keir Starmer's come back and basically said, I've got to change things to try to get more of a grip. And on delivery, I think what he sees Darren Jones's job as is driving delivery. So there wouldn't be, I guess the nearest equivalent might be in our time, Michael Barber, who was head of the delivery unit.
Or Jonathan Powell as the chief of staff.
Yeah, but then he's got a chief of staff, which is Morgan McSweeney, who's the sort of strategy guy.
And it slightly worries me because the way that Theresa May did it is she brought in Gavin Barwell, who'd been a minister and an MP as the chief of staff, but he'd left Parliament.
Yeah.
So he was full time.
No, it's a tricky thing, is because the other thing about politicians, once they become politicians, they are seen differently internally. I think Darren Jones, I really like him. I think he's a very good communicator, and I think he's a detailed guy. But what I worry about of this
guy Jones is being given Alistair Campbell's job. By the way, if you're wondering why Campbell is so interested in this, he's going to be the new Alistair Campbell.
Set up is even that we're talking about it because, you know, Keir Starmer did an interview on the BBC yesterday. Here I am, I'm back. I'm dealing with the small boats and I'm shaking up the team. That's not a message for the message I want to hear from the government is what are we doing for the country, medium and long term? And the other change yesterday was Tim Allen, who was my deputy in opposition. And then briefly, he stayed around for a few months, but then went off into business. Very successful PR company that I'm still associated with, Declaration of Interest, Portland. And he's now coming back into the kind of public service sphere. And what I'm hoping from that is that the sort of the strategic messaging becomes clear, because that's the bit to me that I think has been lacking.
Final analogy, I guess, if we're going real inside baseball.
One of my questions is, why didn't they just hire Alistair Campbell back? That's my real question. I mean, I guess he's on too much money now or something, but just, like, he's still sitting there punditing from the sidelines. Why didn't they just bring him back? I don't really get some of Starmer's decisions. But anyway, let's carry on.
When Dominic Cummings left the Boris Johnson setup, Steve Barclay, who was a Conservative MP from Cambridgeshire and had been in the cabinet, and a minister, came in to do this sort of role, which may be a sort of comparable. He was the sort of chief of staff. For Boris. I mean, I always worried about it at the time.
Yeah, I suppose Campbell is tainted by Iraq and possibly he's got mentally unstable. He's got demons or whatever. But, like, I mean, could anything be worse than Starmer's messaging over the past year? Like, can anybody do any worse? This is what I'm saying. Like, these people should never be like, so I want Mourinho to make a comeback. Really want Mourinho to get a big job. Anyway, let's carry on.
Because I was very, very conscious as a member of parliament that you're balancing having to be quite rightly with your constituents and do your the only person who gets a pass on that basically is the prime minister. The rest of us really have to be in our constituency a lot. The whips are driving us to vote in parliament. And I think these jobs are best done by somebody who isn't a member of parliament, because I think it should be a real 14-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week job. And that's very difficult to do if you're an elected representative.
I think the other thing that may be part of the thinking is that Pat McFadden over in the Cabinet Office has been doing a lot of the sort of...
Yes, Jose Mourinho. I want Jose Mourinho to come back and prove to the world that anti-football can beat total football. Everybody's saying, oh, he's done AA, he's over. Jose's done, he's over. He's never going to be done. He's never going to be. He'll make a comeback. I know it in my bones. All right, let's carry on. This is McFadden, who I mentioned in my article.
Communications, troubleshooting, when things are a bit tricky, and he's total safe pair of hands. And I think Darren Jones is similar in that. So look, this is new...
Wait a second. Now it sounds difficult, right? It sounds to me as though there's a potential issue.
Well, no, my point is, I think
Morgan McSweeney, Pat McFadden, and Darren Jones, there's going to be some ambiguity amongst civil servants on who's actually driving this, right?
No, the point I was making about Pat is then that frees Pat to do more of the kind of governing strategy and the political strategy, which he did very effectively in opposition with Morgan McSweeney. But look, my worry about this is sort of the third or fourth kind of shake-up of the communication.
Yeah, I think the Jose equals Blair. It's not a bad analogy. I mean, I don't know. I like Mourinho a lot. I just love the fact that in an era where everybody's playing like tiki taka, but he's like, no, fucking play defensive on the counter anti-football. Brilliant. It's one of the all-time best heels. And I love that Chelsea side he had when he first came in as well. Brilliant. Special one.
His team, right? And ultimately, the communications has to be driven by a very clear, compelling medium and long-term strategy, which you then turn into a communication strategy.
Right. And what it wasn't, it's not a reshuffle in the sense that Rachel Reeves has been replaced or Bridget Phillipson has been replaced. In fact, on the economic side, to add to the complexity, they've brought in Manu Shafiq. Now, Manu Shafiq is sort of chief economics advisor, is that right?
Yeah. Now, which to me, as a journalist going back in Thatcher time, because one of the reasons for the ultimate sort of crumbling of the Thatcher government was the fact they had this long-running battle between her and Nigel Lawson over her independent economics advisor, a guy called Alan Walters. Now, I don't know whether Manu Shafiq is of that sort, who's going to cause that sort of trouble.
Well, I'd be interested to know what you think Manu is there to do. Is she there to say, actually, we need a very, very radical, clear economic program that everybody can identify. We're going to take risk. This is the big idea. Or is she supposed to be a sort of...
Let's see if we can get to the bit with Farage here, because this is getting... We've already been quite into the weeds of internal Labour politics on this show. So see if we can get to Farage.
And I think maybe understanding that
Mandelson and others sitting around talking.
And it's Gordon, and it's the politicians, but it's people outside. So it's a never-ending iterative conversation.
So he enjoyed debate ideas. He'd
all
get
the
you in, and he wanted, and he'd play and argue with you. And then at the end of every week, he'd say, this is what we're now doing.
Yeah, Sunday evening, the facts.
This bit sounds interesting.
Peter Hyman, who used to work as part of our team, in fact, he and Tim Allen, back in opposition, worked really closely together. And Peter Hyman's written this very interesting Substack piece today where he's analysed a note that Tony Blair sent to us by fax sometime around 2000. He's just got four paragraphs. But what it shows, and we'll put it in the newsletter, because what it shows is that our operation was driven all the time by relentless, never-ending conversation, iterative conversation about strategy. And then at the weekend, Tony would kind of formulate his and our thinking and set it out on paper.
So this famous...
Brilliant leadership by Tony Blair. Brilliant leadership. Leading from the top, taking the opinions of his team into account and then laying it out as a top-line executive strategy. Bet Starmer doesn't even bother.
Famous Safer Government stuff is presumably a description of you, Jonathan Powell, Angie, Mandelson, and others sitting around talking.
And it's Gordon, and it's the politicians, but it's people outside. So it's a never-ending iterative conversation.
So he enjoyed debate ideas. He'd
all
get
the time.
You in, and he
all
wanted,
the time.
And he'd play and argue with you. And then at the end of every week, he'd say, "This is what we're now doing."
Yeah, Sunday evening, fax machines were still around, and well, I know they're still around, and apparently the National Health Service remains the biggest purchaser of fax machines in Europe. Stop getting fax machines, NHS. And it would whir in and it would essentially be, we've got our morning meeting to start the week tomorrow. This is what I want to talk about.
And do you think that was helped by having Jonathan Powell or Gus O'Donnell or someone draft this thing or bring it all together?
No, Tony wrote this.
He did it himself.
Tony wrote it.
Right.
At Chequers usually or wherever he was at the weekend. He wrote it himself. And sometimes it would say things like Russia underlined. They would just say, speak to me. In other words, I still want to talk a bit more about this.
Absolutely fascinating insight into the internal workings of tone.
As a guide.
This is him also calling you over the weekend and playing his guitar to you and this kind of stuff.
And he's calling other people and he's talking to Gordon and he's talking to Robin Cook when he was foreign secretary, wherever it might be. But then he would sit down. And I think this is the point. The strategy at the top has to be driven from the top and understood by everybody. And the only way to have everybody understand it is for them to be part of that discussion. And I think that's the bit that I hope Tim Allen, because he, of course, was, you know, part of that team, particularly in opposition. I hope that is what he tries maybe to impose upon this. I often hear from ministers, for example, that there isn't, it's not a kind of think in ink political operation. There's not this sort of relentless kind of iteration. Now, they may think it's a waste of time, I don't know. But I would argue that a year in, are they in the place where they want to be?
See, I often just get the impression with Starmer that he's got a set of orders. I don't know if they're coming from Blair or somebody else, but it's like he's got a set of objectives he's been given by somebody else, and he just tries to use the government to deliver those objectives rather than involving them in any kind of there's never been any sort of vision from the Starmer government, more a sense they've just got a job to do. That's what it feels like to me. I mean, I don't know if it feels like to you.
I don't think any of them are saying yes. And that means there's got to be a reset. And it may be in the end that you do need to.
Right. Let's see if we can get to the Farage bit now. That was interesting, though, wasn't it? It was interesting. All right, here we go. This is the Farage bit, and then we'll do the super chats.
Start of the slide to Trumpism, given Farage's friendship with Trump. Just a little bit of background on this for listeners. The council banned the Nottingham Post, its website, Nottinghamshire Live, and the BBC-funded local democracy reporters from access to councillors' press releases and events. Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, my one of the things that healthiest about local democracy are what remains of our local newspapers. My whole time as an MP was a lot about the Cumberland and Westmoreland Herald, for whom I wrote a weekly or bi-weekly column, but also the Westmoreland Gazette, the Cumberland News, BBC Cumbria. I mean, these things are really what holds you to account the way the national newspapers come. I mean, there's an online thing called Cumbria Crack, but basically...
This is pretty interesting because I follow a guy, you could be watching, you could be in the chat, called Daniel Bostock, who was known for a few years back for doing like comedy right-wing songs and things like that. But he also occasionally does like shorts and uploads on his channel. And he is actually in Lee Anderson's seat, and he's done a number of uploads now where he's just fuming about what's happening in his seat with Lee Anderson as the MP. And he's saying that, you know, they've had record immigration into that area, and that Lee Anderson never says a word, never does anything about it. And he's like making his videos trying to like get Lee Anderson's attention. So it's kind of interesting to hear now that they're banning local press and things like that. There's something weird about reform, isn't there? Something really weird about reform. It's almost like they're a kind of uber top-down corporate operation that doesn't actually want any connection or feedback to real people. And if any real people get involved with them, they find themselves fired, like our buddies from the Lotus Eaters. It's weird. Very strange indeed.
That's what told voters day in, day out, what was actually happening on issues.
Yeah, and one of the worst consequences of the whole social media revolution and, you know, the kind of gradual takeover of local...
Yeah, and I mean, Rupert Lowe seems like a real... I mean, whatever you make of him, he seems like a real bloke. And not only was he kicked out of that party, they called the police on him. There's something weird about reform. That there is, it's like they're an ersatz party. They're a plastic operation, almost like a TV psyop in a way. They're not a real party. This is why I'm against them, because they're not a real party. They're not serious. They have no actual infrastructure or apparatus, and they do everything possible to shut down normal politics. They're weird. They really are weird. And I've heard anybody who's been involved with them in any single way has come out saying, yeah, there's something strange about the whole thing.
Media has been the sort of death of local newspapers and local media organizations. So the question about whether this is Trumpism, yes, it is. Richard Tice, the Dubai-based MP for wherever he's the MP for.
Not for Dubai.
He's not the MP for Dubai, no, but he's basically saying that they have the right to decide who they talk to, which, of course, is totally Trumpian. That Caroline Leavitt, brilliant profile of her in The New World, by the way, this week. She's constantly basically picking and choosing who can be in the White House room and what have you. Now, what gets my goat about this one, though, One, as you say, is that local people who vote for local politicians, whatever the view of the papers covering them, have a right to know what they're doing in their name, and local media is important for that. But secondly, I imagine if they're listening to the BBC, Nigel Farage's most loathed media organisation, which nonetheless gives him the easiest ride, they will doubtless be covering the fact that Nigel Farage is on his way to America. Why is he on his way to America?
Look at the look at the picture they've used.
America. He's going to give evidence to a Republican-controlled congressional inquiry about the threat to free speech in Britain. He's going to talk about what a tragedy it is that Lucy Connolly, this sort of Mother Teresa figure, was locked up for.
Now, I am convinced, guys, that all of this is. There's a lot of question marks about Lucy Connolly. I'm trying to remember the name of the Substack that I read, but there's a lot of question marks about like her account. She was posting something like 160 times a day, right? Now, I have days where I post a lot on Twitter, but 160 is a lot of tweets in one day. And she had an account that was, the size of the account was something like 9.5 thousand followers. But she was posting 160 times a day, and then on every single one of those posts that she was posting, her engagement was like 10,000 likes plus, right? On a 9,000K account, she was getting 10,000 likes, okay, posting 160 times a day. That's not normal. That's not normal, okay? I've got 55,000 followers. Lots of people are on Twitter just for me, right? Lots of people have said, I am only on Twitter to follow you. And I, okay, don't post as much as that. Maybe I'm lucky if I get one or two posts that have 1,000 plus likes in a day. I always note those ones because I highlight them, right? But most posts don't do that. Many of those posts, whereas every single one of hers, 160 a day, was doing 9,000, 6,000, 10,000 likes. That's not normal. Another very unusual thing about Lucy Connolly is that when she was let out of prison, she didn't have the same restrictions put on her that certain other people did. Other people who've been arrested for speech, who've done time for various different things. Samelia would be one of them. Putting up stickers, you know, essentially. Actually tamer than what Lucy Connolly did, if you think about exactly what he said and the actual things that she said. But he wasn't allowed to do any interviews. He wasn't allowed to do any media appearances. He wasn't even allowed to meet with his friends. Lucy Connolly, straight on Reform's main stage, endless, breathless coverage in the Telegraph and the Daily Mail and on slop media, and now being used as evidence in American Republic narratives and so on. Something weird about Lucy Connolly. Something weird about Lucy Connolly, I'm just saying.
Suggesting that immigrants should be set on fire. He's probably going to talk about the way that the media is completely controlled by the government. A government which, by the way, gets, you know, probably the worst treatment.
Well, what I'm saying here, Tom, is that she's had different treatment from the treatment that many, many people, and there are plenty of people who've made videos about this, people who've done time for tweets, people who've done time for various activities. They have conditions put on them where they're not allowed to do any interviews, where they're not allowed to meet people. Whereas Connolly, you can't move without seeing her. They want you to know her. So there's definitely a difference. There's definitely a difference. I also have question marks over the Graham Linehan arrest. And the same guy who wrote that, the reason I found the Lucy Connolly one is because the same guy also said there are strange things about him, right? Which is that... for example, we all know people who've been stopped at airport, and they're stopped at airport under Counterterrorism Act 2000, right? The Tony Blair special, which is a special unit, okay? That is not like, it's not the normal police, it's counterterrorism. Linehan wasn't stopped under Counterterrorism Act 2000. He was stopped by the normal Met Police under Public Order Act 1986. Okay, completely different act by five armed guys, right? Very, very unusual. And the timing of it was unusual because he had a trial forthcoming And also because Farage was just about to fly to America to do this. So again and again, blanket breathless coverage in the center-right press. These things are open questions, I would say. They're open questions. There's definitely something going on, I would say. I smell something fishy, personally. But your mileage may vary.
By the press than, you know, even Neil Kinnock and Michael Foot did. So the hypocrisy of this is what gets me.
Can I, though, just... There's something that's always worrying me. Often when we talk about Farage, you quite rightly point out that he gets a lot of media coverage, and you quite rightly point out that he's managed.
I'll say about Linehan that the most rational explanation I have found is that, right, and I came up with this myself, right, but it's the only thing that is not too kind of like tinfoil, is that Mark Rowley, the chief of the Met Police, who is a politician himself, let's not forget, wants to get ahead of this whole issue, wanted to make a point, planned for this arrest to go kind of, you know, he knew that Linehan was a guy with a huge public profile. He knew that it would get Toby Young and people like that and all the press animated. And he did it as a stunt, basically then to go to the government and say, look, we have to stop doing these arrests for tweet bullshit. So it could actually just be a stunt by Mark Rowley, believe it or not. Now, I don't believe for a second that Mark Rowley has got any commitment to free speech, but I do know that he is an arse-covering politician, right? So he could just be getting ahead of a narrative himself. So it may not be, you know, a plot with that many moving parts, but there's certainly something a bit weird about the way Linehan was arrested and the specific way it happened, which is very different from when any other person we know who's been stopped in an airport, right? He was stopped in a different way, is what I'm saying. Okay. Anyway, let's carry on.
To skip accountability for Brexit. And of course, most of our left-leaning listeners very much love this, because then the story is basically Farage is just a product of a stacked media system. But presumably there is another part.
If you want to know the name of the account, by the way, that's done these articles on Substack, it's a little bit... honestly, I think that this stuff is not... Like, I don't dismiss it, because I think that there's something fishy going on in general in the country. I think there are forces that are trying to like topple Starmer's government, so you could even support what these people are doing. But hold on a minute. Let me see if I can find... the name of that guy who wrote the articles. I wish I knew. I don't use Substack but often enough to have a look. Hold on. Here we are. Okay, so it's called Thinking Coalition. Thinking Coalition is the name of the Substack account, and he's got stories on both Linehan and Connolly, basically saying like there's something odd. And he's saying that basically Starmer is being set up for whatever reason as a heel, as a kind of for the center right, he's being set up as a boogeyman, as a thing. And all of these narratives that are coming are basically framing the situation in a certain way. Now, I've heard other people speculate that actually Starmer himself wants to make the center-right chimp, basically, that he actually wants a showdown, not with the quote-unquote far-right, but with the center-right. And a lot of the things that are being done are being provoked from that end. I don't know what to believe. There's a lot of theories out there. But because there's unusual things happening, I don't take everything on face value. And I mean, I made a tweet earlier on where I said, look, if you read it in the Daily Mail or you read it in the Daily Telegraph, and you're going along with them, you're probably being played. Like those two papers lie about pretty much everything. So I suspect shenanigans in some way on both of those stories.
But this, which is he's also talented. He's also playing the system well. And it'd be lovely to get you to reflect a little bit on a couple of things that he does well, because I think it's dangerous to get in the mindset of, you know, as the Lib Dems tend to at the moment, we're not doing anything wrong. We're making all the right speeches, doing the right. It's just nobody will ever cover it. Or the Labour government, we're a terrifically successful government. It's just the press advice against.
I agree with that. Look, if I were to make an analysis of Nigel Farage, he's a very, very good communicator.
And what makes him good? What sort of things does he do well?
Remember Nicola Sturgeon when we interviewed her recently? And she said that a lot of the Labour ministers, when they come on the television, they speak, and then after they've gone, you don't quite know what they've said. Nigel Farage is very clear about what he wants to say, both on the micro, here I am, I've got a 30-second clip, this is the message I'm going to land, and on the macro, his big points, you know. Now, I disagree with a lot of them, but you know what he stands for. He doesn't like Europe. He's very fond of Trump. He thinks the health service is a bit dodgy and should be kind of, you know, revamped. There isn't a lot of talk about that too much. But you know where he comes from. And the other thing he has, I mean, I've noticed this whenever, you know, I mean, as you know, I've been trying to get him to come on the podcast for some time. He sort of says yes, but then never quite commits.
I managed to interview him on one of my BBC programs, yeah. But that's part of the general. So
So, for example, when he had an LBC show, I used to go on it regularly because I quite like engaging with people whose views I fundamentally disagree with. But the
I might see if I can track down some of those shows. I'd love to know what these two talked about when they talked. Sounds interesting.
Another thing I would say, he can be very charming. If I turn up, I might sort of, you know, want to go straight in pilot and say, well, this bullshit you're talking at the Congressional Inquiry. He'll probably say to me, oh, God, you lot were very unlucky at Old Trafford the other night. He'll always remind me that he's a Crystal Palace supporter. Love to know if Crystal Palace fans have ever seen him there recently. But anyway, but he's charming and he can be funny. And the other thing I would say about him, he really studies this stuff.
And he's relentless. I think another thing that I've observed about politics, doesn't matter whether you're talking about Liz Truss or
Jeremy Hunt said, how much do you want it?
Jenrick or Farage. I mean, famously, he failed to get elected to Parliament, I think, is it four times?
No, more than that. Eight, wasn't it?
And then finally makes it, right?
Yeah.
And just keeps plugging away. And,
resilience.
And he will shut down parties, found new ones.
Curious how he keeps on shutting down and founding new parties, isn't it?
He survives every type of scandal, strange funding patterns coming in from his mates, failing to disclose this thing, but he just doesn't stop. And for 30 years...
But it's Trumpian. It is Trumpian. But the thing about studying it, so this is what such, again, underlines the hypocrisy about this Nottingham Press thing. Nigel Farage told me he still reads every single national newspaper every day.
Interesting. I mean, one of the things that somebody mentioned to me recently is that Farage may actually have more power levels than meets the eye, and that he's closely studied Enoch Powell and Oswald Mosley and knows all about them, and actually used to talk a little bit more candidly about these things when he was younger. I can't substantiate that, but these are the sorts of rumors that go around. So, I mean, some of the recent aesthetics of Farage have suggested to me that he's leaning into more of this, not the football kit, all that stuff is cringe. I mean, the big flag, the echoing mic, like surely that sort of stuff, if he's as interested in a student of the game as this, cannot be an accident. But anyway, let's see where they go.
I think that's a waste of a politician's time. That takes a lot of time to do that. Now, he's not reading every word, but he's flicking through and he says what he's doing is trying to work out trends. And he's also working out who should I talk to? Who's pushing the buttons that I want to push? So, for example, he's got an interview in the Daily Express and the front page headline is Farage to Starmer, I'll take your job. Right. Now, it's not much of a message in terms of, you know, policy or any of that stuff. It's a message in terms of I'm playing the game better than they are. So I think it's a combination.
So he thinks
of those
a lot about the media. So when I imagine
he thinks obsessively about
he's reading the newspapers, he's circling headlines, he's underlying people he might speak to, he's putting a lot of questions.
See, this is an interesting different side of Farage that we're learning about here, because I mean, a lot of the stuff we hear from people who've been in reform or have been involved with any of his operations is that he doesn't have meetings, doesn't really want to know about policy or detail or things like this. These guys are saying actually he's obsessed with the media. He and as a student, this is very interesting indeed. I find these two more insightful than the LBC lot. You have to agree. Come on.
Mark, should we be tacking this way? Yeah. Oh, that's quite an interesting angle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Which is kind of different to what I would see as good strategy, which is kind of, you know, being clear and then you dip in and out of that. But he's obsessed with the media. He is a creature of media. When you meet him and when you bump into him and just have a chat and stuff, he will mainly talk about media. He won't really talk about policy.
The thing that I
see, and this is what I worry about with reform, though, is that they're all surface. They're all media. It's just a TV channel. Reform is a TV channel masquerading as a party. This is the thing I worry about as to how serious they are.
What struck me about him is how strange his life has become, because he basically said to me last time I saw him that it's very difficult for him to walk through the streets. He's gets a lot of abuse, very angry with him. I think he has security guards with him.
People are saying it worked for MAGA, but what is MAGA? It's basically a shell game for the Israeli government. In all, Trump's law is total. I don't think Farage is that, though. Farage is also not as in with them as you may imagine.
Can't walk, he has to travel in vehicles. So there's a sort of odd dynamic going on. On the one hand, he's a populist politician who's about having a pint of beer in the pub. And on the other hand, actually, he's increasingly having to live a life which is quite kind of distant.
I'm not sure, but I think the security thing is a bit status driven. I'm not saying he doesn't get death threats and all that stuff, but you know, lots of us do. But so I think it's partly a sort of status thing. It's making him look more kind of I'm important. And actually, I think he does still go into pubs and, you know, you hear stories of him sort of just wandering in. And so he's got a way of talking and communicating that is quite Trumpian. It's sort of, you know, it's conversational, it's flowing, it's often funny.
And the into pubs thing is, I also think, is almost necessary now in the modern world. It doesn't matter whether you're Zoran Mamdani in New York or whether you are Jokowi, who did it a lot in Indonesia.
Is Mamdani going to pubs then? I thought he was a Muslim.
That ability to be seen with people, to be open to people, to be out on the ground, not quite seeing enough of that from Starmer. And it's a pity because actually he's quite natural with people one-on-one.
Yeah. I think the other thing, though, is that it's like I saw a video they put out.
Have you ever seen Starmer be natural with anyone?
Labour Party social media put out of him playing football. Well, we know he plays football, and that's fine. But I think when you're, you know, that's a part of it.
Okay.
You see Starmer playing football.
I think for Farage, this is why I do relate it to the way that the media treats him. The fact that he can do that stupid video he did last week that we talked about with the white fur coat and pretend.
Yeah, one of the cringiest things I've ever seen. One of the worst things of all time. Absolute the worst thing of all time. Oh, I hate what's happening. I really do. Just making our politics into this slop. Absolutely despise it. They all are cheering it on as well. Cheering it on and giving it energy every day. Oh, God help us.
He's a rapper. What he would say, and he said, this is a phrase he uses a lot of the time, is just a bit of fun. Okay. Well, it's not just a bit of fun when, as a consequence of your policy and a consequence of your relentless messaging about immigrants and immigration, we are back to a place where, as happened in, I think, with the northeast of England the other day, the P word is now being daubed on bus
and
shelters.
And where he's talking about full Trumpian 600,000
deportations.
Yeah.
Do we realistically think, Zia, we can deport 5?
Has Trump deported 600,000 people, though? I mean, they're calling it Trumpian. Did Trump actually do it? I'd love to know. Fuentes reckons he hasn't done anything like that. So I'd love to know what the actual stats are.
600,000 people in the lifetime of the first parliament?
Totally. Yeah.
Driven there, by the way, by the fact that Rupert Lowe, this is the other thing about Farage. Farage is not a team player. Farage can't keep a team together.
No, they keep collapsing.
They keep going.
But it doesn't seem to affect him.
No, it doesn't seem to affect him because ultimately it's about him. And actually, he quite likes having somebody to the right because he can say, oh, I'm not as bad as Tommy Robinson. I'm not as bad as Rupert Lowe. But the consequence of him and also the media, you know, the right-wing media.
Very interesting point. Very interesting structural point made by Campbell.
Look, I saw a thing on social media the other day, this crowd of people. It looked like, you know, you see it with football fans when they're sort of charging through railway stations. But this was just a group of people basically shouting racist, chanting racist abuse. Okay. Another thing I saw yesterday, kids with the, one of their parents in front of them filming, saying, go on then. And they started this chant about, what do we want? We want them out. When do we want them out? We want it out now. Talking about immigrants, all waving flags and all this nonsense. And so I think he knows what he's doing and he does it, but then he slightly pulls back.
Good exchange on Twitter.
Very true. This is what I worry about with all of this, is that all those people are basically being useful idiots for Farage, who then leeches like a vampire off the energy. But then when it's time to like be accountable, he throws those people under the bus. Oh, I'm not like them. He won't actually stand there and lead you. He'll let you take the hits. He'll let you go to jail. He'll let you, you know, take all of the abuse part of it. And then he'll just kind of suck up all the energy and be the actual beneficiary of it. This is what I was trying to explain to people over the past week, but they don't seem to get it somehow.
Between Paul Hilder and Douglas Carswell, who was this Tory MP, then became a reformer. I guess it was those days a Brexit Party MP, who's now moved to the States. And Hilda's pointing out that when he was with Carswell in 20.
Yeah, but you see the guy in the chat saying SAA because he needs to acquire power without getting knocked down by the establishment. What's the iron law of oligarchy? By the time he actually gets into power, just like Maloney, just like Trump, just like every other one of them, just like AOC, doesn't matter if you're left or right, by the time they actually get into power, by just like Le Pen, they're so whittled down, they've been playing that game for so long that they just become part of the system themselves, as per Robert Michel's iron law of oligarchy. Okay, so Farage just becomes the establishment. And that's what's happening right now. He's getting reform ready so that they can just be the same as any other bloody government. If Nigel Farage actually deports 600,000 people, I'll eat that hat that you see in my videos. I mean, I hope he does. I hope I do get to eat it, right? But come on.
14. He saw a sort of right-wing figure that he could still quite respect, who was prepared to call out racism, who was prepared to talk about the genuine contribution made by immigrants to British society. And now Carswell's gone well off and is saying, you know, we don't want any Abdul's in Britain, I think was the phrase, right? And so Hilda is saying, what happened to you? What's happened over the last 10, 12 years? And Carswell's like, I'm not going to get into your gotcha stuff. I'm not. But fundamentally, what we're talking about is...
Right, so that guy I just replied to is now banned for coming back with absolute crap, boomery loop. Just get out of here. Go and watch Tim Pool. Never show your face here again.
Somehow, what once looked as though there was a sort of respectable right-wing kind of, you know, maybe sort of sub-Jacob Rees-Mogg covered, you know, we're worried about immigration, but we're respectful towards immigrants, we're not racist, is now becoming, with people like Carswell, something much, much more troubling.
Yeah, but in this, don't underestimate the impact of Trump on that. Trump and the kind of white supremacists in the States, they're out and proud now. They don't feel that they have to sort of trim their views. And I think, look, I do think Brexit was a...
See, this is the trouble. These guys, they're not, though, are they? Trump came out yesterday and said, oh, we hear a lot about anti-Semitism, but we don't hear so much about anti-Christianity. Didn't say anti-white. He said anti-Christianity, which was a pulled punch and didn't... Trump never actually goes there. So all of this is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. The trouble with these guys is they actually buy into the kayfabe. They buy into the same bullshit that the guy I just panned buys into. The reality is none of that is actually happening.
Turning point in this, I think that made people who really don't like having too many foreigners in the country feel emboldened to say so.
On this subject, because it's kind of mesmerizing the different type of politicians, and we're talking about this kind of populist style, but I loved the leading interview that we've just done, which is available now to everybody, with Jonas Gahr Støre, who's the Norwegian Prime Minister. Fantastic. He's the...
Yeah, I mean, anti-racist is not an anti-code. It's not a code word for anti-Christian. It's anti-white. And nobody can tell me that the past 10 years haven't been characterized by relentless anti-white messaging. It's not such a big deal for Trump to say that. He could have said it. Farage could say it. But they just don't. They just don't.
Serving Norwegian Prime Minister. But my goodness, he's a very, very different sort. Hugely thoughtful, brave, but in some ways a kind of sort of old style, quite good-looking, distinguished establishment politician. Quite different feeling from Farage. Did you enjoy that?
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, well, I've known Jonas for a long time. I think he's a great guy and a really impressive politician. Of course, Norway was in the news here this week because they bought...
All right, I think that'll do. That's the kind of guts of it. Some reason my eye has started. I don't know if I had a bit of onion on my hand or something, but my eye is watering terribly, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, let us... I don't know how to stop it now. Eye is just streaming with water. Okay. Broman Henk on last week's Office Hours says... absolute banger of a stream. My only disappointment about it is that I didn't catch it live. Cheers. Firestorm on the same stream just says he's lying. Asylum seekers specifically are entitled to NHS primary care and life-saving emergency care. Elective secondary care is a bit of a grey area, but specifically asylum seekers can use the NHS for free. Okay. I think I did those ones last week. I tell you what, my face is... Why have I got so much tears here? I think I've got some onion in my eye or something. My gosh. Okay. Why am I going to protest? Gazmo says, I generally agree, but lockdown protests were very useful for the hundreds of thousands of people who just wanted to break lockdown and have a party. To your point about... Okay, exceptional circumstance, I guess. To your point about regime permission, on the last lockdown protests, JSO were allowed their protest. Your point about Peterson types is valid. It was easy for the regime to link all lockdown protesters with 5G Ike conspiracy nutters. This is a real danger if the protest is any more than just a party. Yeah, good points. On the same video, why am I going to protest? Chris O'Hanlon says, thanks, unrelated. But do you see any hope with Starmer's recent reshuffle? He has reportedly brought in some astute economic figures. Can they sort anything out? I think the bottom line is they have to. They just have to. They're being forced by reality. And the IMF, possibility of IMF coming down the pike, they have to. Unfortunately, they need to get rid of Miliband, and they haven't done that. But yeah, I do think it's a better cabinet than the pre-Rayner one, to be honest. The real reason slop titles are taking over your YouTube now, Hecate says, as if I would write those titles. He says, I've always imagined you writing them out, cackling like a madman and muttering about little piggies and their slops. And then lots of people said, yeah, I imagine that as well. yeah, unfortunately not. And sometimes you can tell because like American spellings creep in and things like that. I decided, though, since doing that video, since instituting Dogma 3, I don't actually like how long the titles are that the Sloppinator pulls up. So I'm overruling it more. This week I've overruled it. Like I'm gonna sacrifice some slop hits, some slop views, in exchange for purity of Dogma 3, just the look of the thumbnail. Dark, one person, white and yellow. Nothing else. It looks bad if there's too many words. I want fewer words on the thumbnails. Harry Lefemme says, what's your opinion? This is on capitalism causes immigration and feminism. Lots of people very much like that video. Some people had the opposite reaction, but most people liked it. Harry says, what is your opinion on the idea of techno-feudalism? Is it an accurate prediction of the future, or is it too Marxist in its analysis? I think it's coming down the pike already. I think this is the thing that Peter Thiel and friends want, in a way. They're getting there through Carlyle, but also like the Davos crowd. What they're selling is basically a form of techno-feudalism too. I think it's happening. I don't think it'll be good, though, because all the good things about feudalism were real, physical, not virtual. And of course, the world they want to bring in is virtual. Cephalopodo says, and again on the slop video, says, unfortunate that the internet has come to this, though I wonder why only apply the sloppinator to titles. You can farm engagement equals subversion of impressionable normies, mwahaha. Better with sloppified script. Could perhaps begin by introducing the masses to Carlyle. Peak irony. Welcome to the age of cheap and nasty. Though really, you should do a video on limbic capitalism. Well, I've done a few videos like that where I slip in, I introduce people to things along the way, gently, when I'm talking about some slop topic. I try my best to educate as we go along. A real top hat man on the same video says, will the sequin-quoted reform woman make it onto the next 100 with her rendition of Insomniac? This is on the Madonna stuff. I heard she managed to get a spot on stage on the 13th following the Maoris. My God. I'd be surprised if reform allow any of their people at the Tommy rally. Protocol says on last week's office hours, AA, recently you mentioned your interest in listening to Professor Jiang's lectures on his predictive history channel. Have you had a chance to do this yet? His Chinese lens leads to some truly out there analysis. Would love to see Deepest Law stream on his lectures. Thanks. I did watch three or four of his lectures. Truth is, I did start getting bored. I thought he had a couple of good takes and things here and there. But I probably need to go back. But I did start getting bored by him. Preachy says, hello, AA. This is on the Capitalism Causes Immigration and Feminism video. Your channel is almost certainly my favorite on YouTube. Well, thanks a lot for that, Peachy. Well, I am somewhat bothered by the fact that these days I only really watch one person, and that is you. Do you think this is an issue? No, I think you should banish everybody else. Only watch me forever. I just can't seem to find any other good value-free analysis channels. At any rate, have a beer on me. Sorry I can't send more. The driving down of labor costs is taking its toll on my bank account. Well, thanks a lot for that, Peachy. There are some other good channels out there. Morgoth is worth watching always. I watch a range of things. I tend to watch Frody with Mark Webber on Tuesdays. What else do I watch? They're not always value-free, all these people, but these are ones I kind of watch around a little bit. Dickie Spencer I listen to. Watch a bit of Nick once in a while these days. He kind of goes in arcs, him though. He kind of goes on. He generally has some decent analysis, I would say. He understands politics and power in a way. He kind of gets it. I don't know if he's done same sort of reading I have, but he seems to get it, you know. Who else? That'll do. Okay, so Don Juan Play Zero says on the same video, capitalism doesn't create feminism. The government co-sponsored feminism through taxing the family. Thus, you'll get the parents going to work to pay government taxes. Capitalism does help immigration because you'll need more goods and services for more consumers. Feminism happened under stage one capitalism in the 19th century. So don't know what you're talking about there. The suffragettes, the first wave feminists happened in the Victorian era. So wrong. JDA says, what do you make of Blair bringing about devolution? as an Ulsterman, this is on the 10 recent leaders worse than Tony Blair. As an Ulsterman, the union is more important to me than most. And I had always seen it as a step to breaking apart the UK. From my years of watching you, however, it does seem like a good containment move. Keep the nationalists on the reservation and adds another layer of managers. The SNP blew it all over the trans rapist, and they have no actual route to succeeding. Yeah, I mean, it's from the point of view of containment, it's a pretty good move by Blair. From the point of view of multiplying managers and rot in the system, it's one of the worst things that Blair did, in my view. That the devolution alone, it just classic bit of Blair managerialism, really. But yeah, I think I'd love to see the Welsh Assembly, for example, abolished, you know, from a Welsh point of view. On the same video, Jimmy Hoffa says, my pipeline to UAA was actually Tick History. Oh, well, there we are. I was pleased to see Tick History made a video dissing Churchill the other day. So I mentioned him in that one. George says, based. However, the gold sale by Brown was most likely a cover story for something much bigger. Have you had a credible theory that a large tonnage of gold was being leased by London as a way of keeping a lid on the price of gold, meaning demand never squeezed the physical market, merely the paper one? Interesting. A low price of gold helped support the reserve status of the US dollar. And as usual, London was working hard, hand in glove with America. A large number of buyers showed up in the late 90s demanding physical gold, including the German Central Bank, recalling leases which were never meant to be recalled. The story was made public a decade later, although it wasn't in the elite's interest to make a big fuss of it. The Bank of England was forced to make good the unexpected but perfectly legal demands for physical gold with its own stockpile, and Gordon Brown had to run with a cover story to protect British and American sovereign interests by keeping a lid on the gold price and protecting dollar hegemony. That is extremely interesting, George. And you know what? I believe it. I believe that sounds very plausible to me. Sounds plausible. Maybe you'll need Dan, you know, Dan Tubbs or my buddy Black Horse to, you know, go into the veracity of that story. But it sounds plausible to me. As a non-finance guy. Dweller says, has any head of state in history ever overseen such a great reduction in territory from the start of their reign to the end of their reign as Elizabeth II? Surely not. Surely nobody. In British history, the only one that springs to mind is Henry VI, who basically lost all of... his father's French holdings. You know, Henry V kicked some ass in France, and Henry VI just lost all of the gains. But of course, the British Empire was much bigger than France. So, I can't think of anybody. Yeah, she has to be the number one. MT Cameron says, after being quite pleasantly surprised at reform last week and even feeling somewhat positive about them, I have snapped back to reality this week after seeing the cringe fest that was the Reform Party conference. I have since been having a nightmare of that woman singing to the crowd. Very fitting that she called her song Insomnia, because that's what it has given me. Yeah, I mean, it was so bad. Silent Serpent says, how do I keep my savings in the coming shit show, AA? Gold, always believe in your soul. Yeah, I mean, I don't know any other golden land than it, they're the hedges, but sure, if they really want to, they'll find a way to get their grubby mitts on that too. In terms of super chats, and I'm going to have to pick up the pace here because I'm going to have to go and get AAA soon. Cringewalker says, I can't see how Starmer survives a four budget negotiations. Blue and red Labour going at each other's necks over handout cuts. Maybe he just needs to tell red Labour to shut up, basically, and say, look, countries are on the verge of collapse. And we don't want to know it. We don't want to be with our hands on the till for the second ever IMF intervention. after James Callaghan was the first one. I don't want to be in the history books for that. So pipe down. That's what he needs to say. Pipe down or you'll face the full force of the law. DC says, could you comment on the Fabian Society? Is this an example of an elite? Absolutely. I tell you who's looking into the Fabian Society right now. Is my buddy, Lewis. What's his surname and name? Bucknell? Lewis? What's his name? That guy, he's Lewis Breck. But Lewis Breckpool is actually currently looking into Fabian Society. So if you have any information about the Fabian Society, give it to Lewis because he's currently investigating. Freedom in Church says, compost sounds like AA has finally taken the carrot pill. No, I've just kind of cleaned up around the lodge and wanted to make it look nice. And I want to I've planted some flowers and I've got a lot of greenery and excess wood and dead leaves and things. And I'm going to turn it into compost over the winter. Joseph Armstrong says, hi, AA. Have you seen YouTube predictive history? No, I have not. Is that a new AI thing or I don't know. AJ says, the working class can kiss my ass. I've probably got three nice houses at last. Angela Rayner, probably. Bets on the next smear job, I reckon, Keir on Ed. If Miliband doesn't go, the country's done for. So I pray it's Keir on Ed. I hope Blair was like, right, now for phase two of wreck Miliband. Because if we don't get that, we're buggered as a country, I'm telling you. Cringewalker says, most Trump deportations come from era one, era two expires of September. So we'll claim more deports, even though their leave date was locked in under Biden. And yeah, more sleight of hand by Trump. Dan says, I need to write a daily video. What's the sloppiest possible subject in the current thing? Oh, God, I don't know. Let's have a look. Go on the Daily Mail, Dan. Oh my God, the Daily Mail. What's the sloppiest possible thing that Dan could write a video about? There we go. Thomas Skinner storms out of a Strictly Come Dancing press conference. So Dan, I dare you to make your daily video about Tom Skinner storming out of the Strictly Come Dancing press conference. And if Carl comes storming in and saying, Dan, what the hell are you doing? I've at least got some standards to maintain here at Lotus Eaters, even though we need to maximize clips. Some slop is too much slop, says Carl. And you have, Dan, have to come back and say, Tom Skinner is an absolute patriot. Bosh. I dare you to do that. Bosh, do a video on the fat Bosh guy that the BBC have been pushing this week. Fat John, the big Bosh man, John, right? And Thomas Skinner tying it into him storming out of the press conference. Go on, it'll be a little in joke for AA watchers. I bet, you know, Dan makes that video and it's like breaks all the records in Lotus Eaters history. Dan's Tom Skinner video. TP says, Remark 88, excellent Rumble channel. Simon Roche of the Soulanders, also UNN, David Cleves, Steve Peters. TP also says, what do you think will happen after this sovereign debt crisis? What comes after? I don't know. I just think I don't think it's going to be crash. I think we're just going to keep on lumbering on forever, basically. He also says, have you read the protocols? And I've never actually sat down and read them. No, I've come across snippets of them here and there, of course, but, you know. And Peter says, you have a busy schedule. Get out, he says. Is that it for the Super Chats? I think so. Oh, Yiz says, if your daughter is AAA, does that make your mother just single A? Little pokey out tongue. I think it's in the law. It's been my dad who's been co-opted as the single A for some reason. But Okay, and I think that is it. I need to go and get this spag bol ready, pick up the little one. Thank you very much, everybody. If I've missed anybody's chats this week, I'll have to pick them up next week. Pick up a course at the Ecumenical Agency. Hopefully, I'll be back tomorrow for Adam Curtis with the lads. And, oh yeah, there's part two. So my video, 10 British Leaders Worse Than Tony Blair, has a sequel. I did like an hour, and I cut it in half. And so my actual defense of Blair and his record compared to the Tories will be tomorrow. I can't wait to see how that one goes. All right, so watch that in the morning. See what bang is better than Madonna being released. One every morning at 8 a.m., and I'll see you then.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.